You know, Dan, where Dan and I just came out of a 90-minute meeting, you know. Mm-hmm. We've heard some complaints. We've heard some issues. Krims, we have a longer meeting with you tomorrow, but that is a story for another day. But, you know, we've heard your complaints. We've heard your gripes, and we've heard your gripes about our gripes and your complaints about our complaints. And you know what? We're pushing P. We're back to pushing positivity. You know what, guys? You guys are here for a reason. So we love doing this show, okay? This isn't a favor. You know what I mean, Dan? We want to be here, okay? Whether we are traveling or not, doesn't make a difference. We are podcasters.
No, jokes. But for real. No, Phil is right. We enjoy doing this. We love putting it out for you. And we love you listening to it and giving us feedback. We're not bending over backwards, Ropa. We are... You have shaken our senses. You're right.
You know,
we need to be pushing P. That's what we keep saying on the podcast. So from here on out, positivity, joy, happiness, except when we're talking about idiots.
Like Elon. Have you watched the interview, Dan?
I have not. I do look forward to it. Some prime viewing. Actually, honestly, I don't know if I'll watch it. I'm enjoying watching the clips that I've seen here and there.
We'll get into it, Philip.
You said we should start recording because you're about to say something about Young Thug.
I was, but I didn't want to gloss over some of the amazing suggestions Ropa gave us for our new segment. So there's a new segment that has been proffered by our listener. I'm just going to pull out my phone. The WhatsApp for desktop is being incredibly annoying right now.
Mm-hmm. I have it here for you if you want, Philip.
Okay, Dan, what are the suggestions that you offered for the new show segment?
So she says, the best one was the last one. So I think maybe that's the one we should be focusing on. But let me just give all of them. So she petitions to formally name the weekly 5-minute guilt trip segment about how we are so busy, but we're making time for us. Either, or... We low-key hate our listeners. Or send money still. Or finally, or each podcast charge all right. I added the all right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. You know what it is? I realize. I thought, you know what I thought I was doing, Phil? Or I'm sure I thought we were doing in the past weeks. I thought I was giving a disclaimer. Because I was quite aware that we hadn't done what we had always promised to do. You know what I mean? We hadn't quite reached the standards that we normally hold fast. The normally lofty standards. So I wanted to give a disclaimer so that hopefully our listeners know that. Listen, I know that it hasn't reached quite the standards of what you are used to. But this is the reason why. But you're right. You're right. You know, it was coming across as very negative. As if, we are so busy. And that's not the message we want to be pushing on this podcast. So I wanna put it out there. Let the word be out there that we back up. We back up.
Let people know we back on the corners. Put the word out.
Put the word out because we're back in our spaces. The routine is back to normal mostly. And we're able to do this the way it's supposed to be done. In fact, we're going to do it better than it was done before. As of next week, we didn't get a chance to do it this week. My bad. But no, nothing will be blamed. As of next week, we're gonna be sharing some of the topics with our Patreon subscribers so that they can help us choose some of the best things that we can talk about and give our takes on. There'll also be some exclusives for the Patreon subscribers. We're also planning all kinds of cool things for those who subscribe to Patreon and those who haven't. You know what I'm saying? This week, we're experimenting with video. So, maybe you're even watching this on YouTube. I'm putting pressure on ourselves, Phil. I know. I can see you worried, but we said we would. I went and I invested money in this, but I need to work on my lighting. But still, it's a start. I'm going to ask my wife to get some artwork just at the back here. And I'll move a little bit so that we can get the white wall and get some artwork. And yeah. No, it's going to be dope. It's going to be dope. It's going to be dope video, dope conversations. And we're back to the consistency that you know and love. We're here. And put the word out there. We're back.
We chose an episode where I'm dealing with the flu to do video. So you guys get to see me blow my nose in HD, baby.
I know there's times that you've heard on the podcast that we are eating. Well, this puts pressure on us. No more eating. Except that's probably not going to happen. We're still going to be eating every now and again because we know you want a natural feel to the podcast.
And someone bought me a lovely soup that I'm supposed to be eating to help heal my soul. But no, I'm starving for you guys because we love you. Anyway, let's get back to it. Man. So Dan, as we were starting the show, it's going to be all over the place. First and foremost, great to be back home in Zim and dealing with the 15-hour power cuts. So here's a fun fact, Dan. As you know, I moved into
pushing
a new neighborhood.
Pushing P.
As you know, I moved into a new neighborhood. So in this new neighborhood, there seems to be, I'm pretty sure he's retired. If he's still gainfully employed, I'm even more impressed. There's a white man who's taken it upon himself. He's created a group. There's a lot of updates within the group regarding load shedding. This man gives 2-minute updates. He'll give you a summary every evening. My gets ended, went at this time. They returned at this time. This is the amount of time. This is the amount of time there was load shedding on this day. So that we can have historical data, Dan. Data is the key. You can't make informed decisions without data. So I was shocked. Like, this man is on the ball. But while I've been gone, the power situation seems to deteriorate quite a bit because now we're dealing with 12 to 15 hour power cuts, which is not ideal. Not ideal at all.
I have some inside information.
Go ahead.
Which under normal circumstances, I would say, you know, what. But look, these are matters of national importance. The inside information that I received from high sources at ZESA was, and I quote, my one dad.
Ooh.
And I was like, yo, should I be investing in more solar? He's like, my one dad. So make of that what you will. The information has been provided. I have made use of the contacts that I have for your benefit. At this point, Phil, I think we should start the podcast.
I think we should. Then we'll get into some talking points. But first of all, Dan, are you? Wait, no, you're supposed to ask that to me. Jeez, Louise, everything's topsy turvy, but I can undo it as well. Dan, are you
good to go?
I think. Let's
hear the drum play. Okay.
Let me hear a drum play.
No, Philip. Wait, are you
good to go?
Sound of the kingdom.
Let me hear a drum play.
Welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast. We back, and this time we back for good. My name's Danny That Guy, aka Denias, aka Denford Wickmaraini, aka Denimbi, my life, your entertainment, aka I'm done with these streets. Glad I'm not the one who was interviewing Elon Musk because aka Akuna Movement didn't move.
That's right. And you're on with the unmistakable, the slightly congestible Phil Chad, aka Flip Floss, the big boss pick, aka Fidza P, aka Filthy Phil, aka DJ Mkaradi, aka Phil on Musk. I might have some digits. I can't. It's not sitting well with me anymore. Anyway, aka.
I don't know why you introduced it.
AKA Sexington Lovu, and of course, Shamari Ntengero Dringi. Please excuse the stuffiness. I knew I should have worn a mask on that flight. I just knew it. Like, there were two people coughing and I was like, I need to have a mask. And they got me.
Do you think it's COVID?
I don't know. But like, what normally happens is when I'm sleep deprived, and usually sleep deprivation and travel always coincide with me, I'll always land with and get a case of the sniffles. So before COVID, before I knew about masks, I would always travel with an Airmune, Carenza C, Linktagon, and an ACC 200. And I'd take a super shot of those before and after. And those would pretty much stave it off. This time, I forgot to do that. And then when I landed, it was raining in Harare. So I was caught in the rain for a bit. So, you know, after dealing with the 45 degree weather, I was very happy to see rain. So it's fine. I'm already feeling better. Like, I was feeling a little flu-y yesterday. I've been on a massive massive slew of meds. So I should be right as rain by tomorrow. That or I'll be in a coma. It's either or. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad that you're viewing this very positively, Phil, because as you know, we are pushing P on this podcast. Pushing speaking, positivity.
All I've got to say is, you know what? I now understand the fuss about codeine. Like, it's making sense. Like, after you've had like a full tray of Myprodol, it makes sense. You're like, oh, okay. I see what y'all are on about. Okay.
So, I mean, while we're on this, let's discuss Zimbabweans doing it big. Not Zimbabweans, Africans doing it big. As we remember, the new year, Phil, my bad, small slip of the tongue, Africans doing it big. I'm going to start off with one of the Africanest doing it biggest. Burna Boy has an official day declared after him. March the 2nd has officially been declared Burna Boy Day in Boston. Congratulations to you. Don't really know why. What that signifies overall. But congratulations, because he's performing there, but Boston named March the 2nd. He performed there rather, but March the 2nd as Burna Boy Day. Also, Burna Boy will be playing at Glastonbury 2024 along with Ira Starr. So that's a pretty big deal. Shout out to Burna Boy, still raising the African flag, I guess. Hi, if we will claim him. So both Burna Boy and Ira Starr, as well as British Ugandan musician Michael Kiwanuka, will be playing at Glastonbury, which is very cool. I want to move on to something else, a Zimbabwean this time. Zimbabwean visual communicator Taurai Valerie Mtake has created a new Google font. What? It's a new Google font named Madimi One. And she is communicating Nguni vibes, also she says in this new Google font. It's going to be interesting. I don't know how that comes in, but that's what the headline tells me. Let me read the description. Google Fonts approached me and had approximately 3 months to digitize a font that she wanted to add to make it available for Google. Madimi One is a rounded sans with a mixed geometric and organic design covering all of Google's Latin core. Madimi takes inspiration from the gentle curved geometry of Nguni symbols. Circles are a main feature representing the womb of a woman in Kintu symbologies. So huge shout out to Zimbabwean-born Taurai Valerie Mtake, who has incorporated Nguni symbology into a new Google font. If you're going to be doing a new design, you want to use something that is bringing in your Zimbabweanness in your design, check out the new font called Madimi One that was created by Taurai over there. Very cool. Let me see. Anyone else we want to shout out? Shout out to Anatoria. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's pretty much it. In our last episode, Philip, there were some discussions that we may want to follow up on. As you recall, we've been paying attention to music news and how things have been going on in the music world. One of the things that we spoke about in recent episodes was the music takedowns that were happening from some major artists. Well, we have some more takedowns that happened. This was from a couple of episodes ago, February 22nd, when we spoke about it in the Can't Copyright episode. We spoke about the takedowns that were happening to Ja Signal's song and to Winky D's music. Well, the most recent one was arguably the biggest song of 2023. Baby Uri Superstar, Entity Tupac Ground, Sangana, Nonwa Titi. It's a superstar. By Delroy Sheway and St. Flo.
You know what? Yeah, I just realized.
That song was removed from YouTube after a copyright claim by the producer of the song Gangsta Made It, who has some qualms.
You know what? I just realized I can call him. Let me hit him up.
Who are you calling?
Gangsta.
Delroy Sheway. Oh, Gangsta Made It. Let's hear what his story is.
Let me just run it by him first.
Oh, okay. Cool.
We'll see throughout the episode if we can get hold of him.
All right, great. Yeah, so that's just an update, and it looks like it's still a scourge that's hitting Zimbabwean music. We hope that these things will be solved. And if you want some people who do understand what's going on, why don't you get in touch with the Two Broke Twimbos? For a small fee, we can sit down and make sure that we negotiate, mediate, and come up with a viable solution for everyone involved. All right. Okay, so that's our housekeeping done, Philip. Now we can talk. Our producer felt that in our last episode, we did not touch enough on the Oscars. So he has given us a lot of content on the Oscars. Okay, since we fashion ourselves as commentators on media and entertainment, we can spend a little bit of time. I'll just give a very quick overview. The 96th Annual Academy Awards are over, and that officially ends the awards season. I'm sure we'll see some more awards coming through, but that was the biggest one that we can expect for a while. The winner of the biggest gong at the Academy Awards, which is Best Picture, went to Oppenheimer. The winner of Best Actor Male went to Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer. Best Actor Female went to Emma Stone in Poor Things. My wife and I watched Poor Things this past weekend. Mm. Extremely weird movie. Without spoiling, I'm just going to give you a little bit of overview of the premise, Phil, and I want you to let me know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a play on Frankenstein. A mad scientist who is played by, oh my gosh, what's his name? He plays Green Goblin in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Anyway, he's excellent. He basically comes across a lady who's committed suicide while she was pregnant. So he takes the brain out of the baby who's still alive and then puts it into the body of this woman and reanimates this woman. So now it's a full-grown woman with the brain of a baby.
What?
Now, as you can probably no doubt guess, Hollywood is not the most moral place in the world. So immediately, there is some hanky-panky that goes on. And it made me feel very uncomfortable.
Are you trying to say rape, then? Is this your way of trying to say rape?
Is it? I don't know, because it's... I don't know. It was very, very uncomfortable. Anyway, long story short, so basically she's developing, this brain is developing faster than normally would because it's in a full-grown body, and then she discovers things like pleasure, which confuses her at first, and then she starts experimenting, and yeah. To be fair, the people that do engage in such activities were not aware of her mental age. They were just charmed by the fact that she acted like a child, even though she was a grown woman. It was very, very weird. But surprisingly, despite the weirdness, by the end of the movie, I was like, yo, this was a really good movie. So yeah, I just wanted to give you an update. Since I did watch an Oscar-winning movie, it won several Oscars, Poor Things, but a very weird premise. Oppenheimer obviously is amazing. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. Spider-Man did not win Best Animation. You know, it happens. Boy and the Heron won it. We spoke about John Cena last week. But as the week progressed, I think I'm just more convinced that, hey, listen, man, I know conspiracies exist. I know there's weird stuff happening in Hollywood. I just don't think that particular incident was part of the weird humiliation ritual kind of situation.
Right. Speaking of the Oscars, I don't know, Dan, if you've seen that 450 Jewish Hollywood elites have signed a petition denouncing the speech by Jonathan Glazer, who won an Oscar for his documentary Zone of Interest. I don't know, Dan, did you see that speech? If it's 450 people, you know, surely this man went beyond the pale. Surely he went on stage and spewed rhetoric that was not only hurtful, but harmful and clearly anti-Semitic. And surely these 450 people felt afraid for their lives. They felt that their religion, their identity, their people were being oppressed, cast aspersions on them. And, you know, they can't walk down Hollywood Boulevard, you know, without having to look over their shoulders. And you know what? Everyone is entitled to make sure that they feel safe. That's one of our human rights. So, you know what, Dan, let's tune in to this disgusting, this hateful speech.
I don't know why you're platforming it, Phil, but okay, let's hear.
By Jonathan Glazer, who, by the way, is a Jewish man. Anyway, let's
just some context, Phil, before you play it. Wait, Phil. So, the movie that was nominated for several Oscars, that Jonathan Glazer's directed, called The Zone of Interest, was about the Holocaust.
The Holocaust. Yeah.
So it was literally about a Jewish family that lived right next to a concentration camp and just a mess. I haven't watched it yet. I don't plan on watching it. It sounds like a very painful movie. But mm-hmm. Yes, so it was made by a Jewish director. It's about the Holocaust. Uh-huh. Now, let's hear the speech when he won the Oscar.
Okay, guys. Obviously, let's put a content warning ahead. Guys, if you are easily offended, I mean, if hurtful speech angers you, please skip ahead a few seconds because, Mr. Glazer. Oof. Anyway, let's see what he had to say. Let's see what he had to say. This bastard.
Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist? Alexandra Bistron Kolodziejczyk, the girl who glows in the film as she did in life, chose to. I dedicate this to her memory and her resistance. Thank you.
Disgusting. How he had the gall, unmitigated gall, to say that on a public platform. So a lot of people are saying that this guy said we refute our Jewishness. He said we refute our Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing a moral equivalence.
The transcription is there. You know, there's closed case. You know, like when you watch the live broadcast, it might be a bit of a delay, but there's someone typing the transcription. Like you can see it there. Like it's available. Like
so, I laugh. Someone posted on Twitter. They posted a screenshot of Amy Schumer basically tweeting, not tweeting, she put on her Instagram some months ago that The Zone of Interest is the best movie ever made. And then, so someone was like, you know what, you have to give it to Jonathan Glazer to really run a long joke from the time that Amy Schumer posted that to the time he gave his speech. Plan to perfection, my man. Mwah.
You know,
the world is upside down, Philip.
I don't think the world is upside down, Dan. I think... This is the status quo. Like, whether you believe it or not, and some people do, that this is actually the best time to be alive, because I used to believe that and then I realized, but actually, we didn't have nukes back in the day. You know what I mean? Like, all it takes, like right now, is for two errant tweets and we could all be wiped out. You know what I mean?
So are you saying this is the best time to be alive or not?
I'm saying it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. There's obviously elements of our existence today that are better, like healthcare. I woke up today feeling horrible, stuffy, clearly had a respiratory infection, immediately able to get medication, which is something that we also don't gloss over. As tough as Zim is, medication in this country is really cheap. Like it's really, you know, Dan, have you seen how cheap Dan, do you know how much fentanyl is?
Fentanyl?
Yes! Fentanyl is widely available in this country. And it's dirt cheap.
What the?
Dan, do you know another thing that's widely available in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've got friends that are pharmacists. They're telling me, Ozempic. The Ozempic craze is hitting Zimbabwe and it's hitting Zimbabwe hard. Do you know, like in America, a thing of Ozempic, a tube of Ozempic, is upward of $900. In Zim, $60. Ozempic on the spot.
This is very concerning. Listen, to our international audience.
When you see me losing weight rapidly, just shh, okay?
Ozempic and fentanyl on cheap, dirt cheap. Come through. Do you think we'll...
Now you're crossing the line there with that joke. No, we're not promoting drugs. I'm just saying, like, it's really cheap.
I'm not promoting. I'm just saying if you need it for your medical reasons.
I got antibiotics for $3. Like, I remember... So here's another story. Little anecdote, but a few months ago, the maid kept coming in and she kept coughing. So, but the cough would not go away. So I gave her some cough medicine. I gave her some Iprodol and some Sinutab. It was that. So I was like, yo, you know, listen, let me take you to the doctor. Down the road, I happen to know that there is a clinic that's sponsored by PEPFAR that has competent doctors there, and you can get cheap treatment. For $5, you can see the doctor, get a prescription, blah, blah, blah. So I gave her $10. And then I went around. It was $10. I came back, and for the $10, not only was she able to be seen by a doctor, she got an injection, she got a course of antibiotics, and then she got a prescription for painkillers, which we went and we got. The painkillers cost me $2. So for $12, even in this failing economy, for $12, someone who had a serious cough/infection was able to get antibiotics, treatment, and painkillers. America could never. $12 is what you pay just to get in the door.
$12 would be way more than that. That having been said, there are some places that charge $100 consultation fee.
And they will never see me.
And it's a copay.
You know, there are people that can afford it. And because people can afford it, we're on a jairiro. I remember when I was run down, someone told me, yo, you need to get rocket fuel and some B12. So yeah. I'm not even gonna mention it, but I went to a fancy clinic because that's where they told
me. Yeah, I know the one you went to.
And they were like $100. And I was like,
yes, that's the one. That's the one I'm talking about.
And I was like,
and the thing is, I was already there and I was like,
may I ask questions? And then I phoned someone else, and I phoned because I got friends that are pharmacists, and he said, dude, are you mad? Come here with $5. So in total $8. For $5, I got a month's supply of B12 shots and the syringes. He showed me how to use them. Now I just give myself B12 shots every week.
Self-medication. You know what, Phil? We have claimed before on this podcast that we are the ombudsman of technology. And this is because, for those of you who don't know what an ombudsman is basically someone who commentates and makes sure that the news that is reported about certain things is reported correctly. So we just want to come here and ombuds to you people that there's some news about YouTube Premium. So technically, it was not available in Zimbabwe. Technically. However, YouTube Premium has now expanded to 5 more African countries, including Zimbabwe. The other countries, if you're interested, are Tanzania, Uganda, Libya, and Morocco. And then, of course, there's some other countries in other parts of the world, Azerbaijan, Jamaica, Kazakhstan, etc., etc. But long story short, YouTube Premium is now available officially in Zimbabwe. I will be very, very interested to know.
What's the price point?
We don't have the price point. I didn't check. But let me see if I can subscribe. I'll pay for it now live. Depending on how much it is.
And your bank charges will be more than the fee. Because I think right now I'm paying $3. I'm paying equivalent $3 through the South African fee.
$3?
Yeah. Well, it's equivalent, yeah. It's like 60 Rand. They don't give you the option to pay annually. I just started buying gift cards and I paid through the App Store. It's a little more expensive because it's the App Store, because obviously there's the surcharge, but it's still like, it's a negligible fee. And yes, I had an argument with a friend and she was like, Phil, no, these small bills add up. And to be fair, she's doing better than me financially. So maybe she's right. But she was like, no, Phil, I refuse to pay for YouTube Premium. And I was like, fam, it's only 50 Rand. She's like, no, it's the principle. And we're trying to watch YouTube. Do you know, like YouTube with ads? Oh my God. I wanted to jump out
YouTube
the window.
YouTube Premium is $3.49 per month in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
That's not bad. Not bad. You know what? I am going to subscribe.
Can you do an annual subscription?
Hold on.
It should be about, family plan should be around five.
$6.49 family plan. Or if you're a student, $2 a month.
Perfect. And no ads.
I thought it was like $15 a month.
Plus you get all the premium content. So Dan, I don't know if you know this, but I get access to Mr. Beast's exclusive content before everyone else.
Wow. That's so dope.
So I don't really watch Mr. Beast stuff often, but I made the mistake of, someone was asking me about TV. I've got a friend who's in entertainment and they're asking me about TV. And I was explaining to them how Mr. Beast does his stuff. Research. And I was showing them, like, yo, one thing that Mr. Beast does really well, and I don't know if you've seen it, is Like, there's the episode where he has all these YouTubers come to the new Cowboy Stadium and he's having like a series of challenges there so that someone can win $1 million in cash, right? And the thing that got me is he's taking content, he's doing like elaborate challenges that would by themselves be an episode of The Amazing Race, like a full 42-minute episode, just one thing. Mm-hmm. He's doing it, he does like 5 challenges in 12 minutes. Like the pace at which he edits is insane. And in my mind, I'm like, how much money is he leaving on the table? Because if he extended his videos by like maybe 20%, 30%, he probably could get more. But he's also optimized and realized, no, I actually need to make it this short so that I get as many views as possible. And his numbers are insane. I think we might be at a point where Mr. Beast might be the first creator to tap back into the monoculture that we had when there used to be broadcast TV.
If you were to like look at the numbers already, I don't think there's a single broadcast that reaches Mr. Beast's numbers. But that's also low key. It's a little bit it's low key. I don't know if I trust those numbers because a YouTube view, I don't know if it's as valuable as a television viewer.
The thing you also have to consider there, Dan, is television views have never been recorded correctly, ever.
True. It's all estimates. But anyway, the point is, at this point, Mr. Beast's numbers are... I don't think there's any live television broadcast or any television broadcast that reaches numbers already.
No. Friends could never, bro.
Yeah.
And then during one of his latest videos, so he's got a challenge where I don't really know the backstory because I just catch it randomly. There's one of his employees, he gives him a brand new Lamborghini. Then he goes like, but wait, there's a catch. You got to survive 4 challenges. And then you can have the Lamborghini. And then there's $100,000 in cash in the Lamborghini. So the first challenge was dropping the Lamborghini from a crane. Then you had to figure out how to make sure the Lamborghini doesn't fall flat. So he goes and he buys like jumping castles and packing materials and he fills it up in this massive pit. Boom. So, and then the Lamborghini only dents the bumper. Then he has to figure out how to stop the Lamborghini from burning. He drops 8 flaming cars onto the Lamborghini and he's like trying to shield it from getting burnt.
You know what I realized? Mr. Beast is the bane of any Zimbabwean business leader. You have to use minimal cost to get maximum profit. Mr. Beast is like, nah, dog. You could have chosen a Nissan. Lamborghini.
Not only that, keep in mind, like the cost of production is now insane. He's renting out these massive cranes. He's giving these people $150,000 to spend buying supplies to protect them. Then the last challenge, Mr. Beast gets a freight train, an actual freight train. And he's like, you've got to stop this freight train from squashing your car. So this man now gets other cars and he gets like railroad sleepers, like an insane amount of stuff. Like, it's ridiculous. And then at the end of it, you realize, wait a minute, Mr. Beast just bought a broken train. Like, homie had to buy that train.
Here's my question, though. Obviously, it's pointless discussing without the figures, but how much is he making per video?
He's making quite a substantial amount because amongst all that, there was a 30-second Samsung Galaxy ad. And it was one of those like really intrusive Truman Show ads where it's like, yeah, you know, like from this distance, it's hard to see. But with our new Samsung Galaxy Zoom feature, we can see the Samsung Galaxy also has AI. So it can repair the bumper. Bah, 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 bah.
If he gets 200 million views on one of his videos. Let's assume that he's making $1 million+ just on YouTube.
No, we let's actually break it down. So let's just say his CPM is 15. Let's say he's doing a CPM of $15, which is low, but it's fair.
So 200 million views would be basically 200,000 times 15.
200 million would be 2 million. 2 million times 15.
No, no, it'll be 200,000 CPM, right?
No, 200 million divided by 1,000 is, isn't that 2? No, it's 200 million.
200 million divided by 1,000 is 200,000.
200,000, yeah. 200,000, so 2
times 15.
1, 2, 3.
200,000 times 15 is $3 million.
That's just AdSense. That's okay, not including so what Samsung are giving him.
Just AdSense, he made $3 million from one video.
Only a YouTuber. Insane. We're not counting assuming TikTok. We're not counting. We're not counting Facebook payments. We're just counting YouTube.
Yeah, plus, I know.
He's also peddling his chocolate throughout the video. So we don't even know how many what numbers his chocolate is doing. Keep in mind, he was making guap of those ghost kitchens and the burgers.
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about return on this particular video. So, the train video that you spoke about, so stop this train, win a Lamborghini, it's sitting on 65 million views. Let's say it will very comfortably reach 150 million views, which seems to be his average.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking at not 3 million. Let's say we're looking at $2.5 million per video AdSense. And then let's say Samsung would have paid him. I'm sure they paid him nothing less than $1 million for that ad. Mm-hmm. So let's say he's made $3.5 to $4 million. Mm-hmm. How much is a train?
I don't know. I don't. Maybe
Lamborghini. I mean, surely he bought it secondhand. 100,000. Throw
no,
it
it's a brand
there.
New. It's a brand new Lamborghini. That's the whole point. It's a brand new car.
Okay, fine. Brand new Lamborghini. $300,000. Train into Mario it. How do you wait? What's the market for a train?
I don't know.
Let alone production costs and all of that. I feel like he breaks even on every video and then he makes his money on the back end.
Which is fair. So obviously this is a terrible example, but it's the closest we have to Nesbitt. I went to Social Blade. On Social Blade, Social Blade is saying Mr. Beast's monthly earnings. Hey, look at how wide this range is. Mr. Beast's monthly earnings range from 400,000 to 6.8 million. It's somewhere in between there. How accurate? So such an accurate tool this Social Blade is. But let's just put it in the middle. Let's say 3 million. 3 million a month just for those videos. Keep in mind, that's just the English, Dan. We haven't included the Spanish because he does Spanish and he does French.
No. Or would it be a separate video?
Yes.
Isn't it just the same video, but...
Well, okay, now, anyway. Now he does. I think now because of YouTube now allowing multiple languages on multiple language tracks on a video. But before, remember, you used to have multiple channels in different languages.
What, wasn't it other people that were taking his videos and then...
No. It was him. It was actually one of his selling points. So ultimately, my man is doing very well for himself. Have you seen his studio?
Like, he is doing very well for himself, but I watched the most interesting interview of his where he said, listen, I would not recommend this life. Because he says for him to just continue, he's obviously making crazy guap, but for him to continue, he has to optimize everything all the time. So he says he can't go on a date without thinking, how do I turn this into a video? So he says, my entire mind is just geared towards YouTube videos. So he's like, I don't know if that's a good life and I wouldn't recommend it.
But that's also the reason he continues to do it is one or two things. I don't think with the amount of money he's generating, he's trapped. Like if Mr. Beast scaled down tomorrow, I don't think he'd lose all of his core fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no.
I definitely think.
Even if he just decided, I'm going on a break for a month, he's good, you know?
Yeah. I think what he's doing is he's like, I've got a short amount of time to maximize, optimize, and then as the years go on, he's probably going to pivot, do something different, or he just might resign. Like a lot of YouTubers are actually just backing out. I don't know if you've been following this, Dan, but a lot of YouTubers are actually just stopping their channels because, like, yo, we're burnt out.
Yeah, and I get it. But as long as you made your monies. All right, let's move on with our discussion, Phillips.
Before we do that, actually, I think a key point is, Dan, as you know, Truly Humble Under God has been in court. And we've been following the story very closely. Mm-hmm. There's now a new video from today's proceedings that has taken, it really has enlightened and given us new insights into what's going on in the court case. So let me play this audio for you. This is Young Thug in court. He's a little different because his hair is cut, but here we go.
Can I get a water or something? I'm so high right now, y'all. I'm about to go to sleep on y'all land. I ain't gonna tell you no lie.
May I approach?
Yes, you may.
We're
gonna take a break.
This is the state's witness, and if you guess you didn't hear it, he said that. Can I really get some water right now? I'm so high right now, I'm about to fall asleep. Once again, drugs continue to be a pivotal part of this court case.
We love to hear it. Love to hear it.
Yeah, the documentary on this case is going to be wild.
So, Phil, every now and again on this podcast, we delve deep into nerdy music news, music industry and the business, not just music. So our producer has kindly pointed us to a headline from musicinafrica.net. Check it out if you are ever interested in music news and the music industry. And it was a report on the global recorded music revenue year on year for 2023. And it showed that there was an increase in revenues that jumped to $35.1 billion, which means that the market is now more than double the size it was in 2015. Very interesting. Streaming is overall adding to the overall market value of the music industry. Very interesting. By far, the biggest chunk of the revenue came through from Universal Music Group. When I say by far, it wasn't actually that by far, but it is the biggest label. 28.3% market share. Sony Music Group was the fastest growing. It's sitting at 11.6% market share. Non-major labels are sitting at 31.5%. They grew by 13%. In 2023. What do you make of these statistics? Please translate them to a layman, Philip.
There's multiple platforms that release reports. There's obviously Media, who are a research publication, and they also do a lot of expensive reports.
This is from Media, by the way, yes.
There's Music Business Worldwide, who I've been following for some years, and I trust their team a little better. So I'm waiting for Music Business Worldwide to drop their report. But ultimately, the music industry has been growing. 2 years ago, we surpassed the golden years of the 90s with CD sales. This is the biggest the music business has ever been. It's actually quite funny. I actually got a call from someone recently. Like I'd written a report, a preliminary report, like in 2017, 2018, where I was like, streaming is going to grow the music industry to levels we haven't seen before, and Africa is going to be the biggest growth market. And someone came across and was like, oh snap, like you were right about this like 6 years ago. How did you know? I was like, oh, well, I just read stuff and I use common sense, but you know, like if you want more insights, pay me. But streaming is doing numbers, as like you've just seen, there's more opportunities for revenues to be generated. You just spoke about YouTube Premium finally being available in Zim. That's money that's is going to filter back to artists and rights holders because of the fact that YouTube Premium also comes with a free subscription to YouTube Music. And YouTube is going to pay out for that. A lot of the consumption of content on YouTube is music. So there's going to be mechanical rights generated from that. It's a lot easier to track radio spins. It's a lot easier to collect. And more importantly, live music is experiencing a massive boom because of global audiences, bigger live shows being put on, touring markets opening up. There's a lot more revenue that's to be exploited there. And of course, in smaller industries like synchronization, gaming, etc., etc. So it's lovely to see, Dan. It's lovely to see. As much as people complain about streaming, even granted TikTok was not paying that much, but it still was contributing to revenues. As much as people and artists in particular who complain about streaming is generating a lot of money for the rights holders. Whether those rights holders are the artists themselves is another story. And that's one of my biggest frustrations. The way people continue to complain about streaming not generating music money for artists, it's not our fault you guys signed bad deals. Renegotiate your deals, guys. Because people are getting paid.
We can't always take the side of the capitalists, Philip. The capitalists are out to exploit. Okay, so I don't know if you finally managed to hear that conversation I had with Sivan Pillay. And one of the things that we spoke about was, oh, it's great that the rest of the world is paying attention to Africa, but obviously we have to be concerned that when Universal, Sony, et cetera, which we are very happy that they are bringing investment and money here. When they think about Africa, they're not coming here because they want to uplift Africa. They're coming here because they see that there's potential for them to make profit there. So we obviously have to be careful on our end. Those of us who are in places within the music industry here in Africa to make sure that there's also fair exchange, that at the same time, as much as these major labels and major investors and whatever might start paying attention to the Tylers and the Don Jazzy's and et cetera of this world. And as much as they're doing that, they're still going to be, by the time they're done, we grow and we have our own Universal Africa equivalents that happen. So there was a little bit of a discussion about that. And I think the way that discussion ended was, listen, these guys are not coming in as Kumbaya, but there is opportunities and there's hope that will come from it. And all we can do is just wait and see how it ends up. I don't know if you had any thoughts about that.
Thoughts about the potential for Africa to, or an African label to grow to the size of international labels?
Either for an African label to grow to the size of international label, or for international labels, what are the opportunities for benefit versus the opportunities for harm, I guess is what I'm saying. We spoke about that. And I remember saying, like, if Phil was here, he would have had some takes on this. So that's why I'm pointing it back to that.
I think we need to be wary of conflating a business venture that's mutually beneficial to a certain degree and conflating neocolonialism. Because a lot of people have those thoughts like, these Western companies are just coming in, extracting, and they're not giving back. And in certain instances, that is very true. Like, companies can come in, extract value, not really return that, and we're left worse off. But now I think because of such a free flow of information and leverage and interest, we have an opportunity and we're already seeing it. And we didn't touch on it last week, but it would be a great discussion to have here, where African labels are making guap, like a serious amount of money. Don Jazzy sold a label for $150 million. That's insane.
Well, sold a majority stake, and did we get the figure? Did we get that $150 million figure?
Well, those are the rumblings that I have from solid sources. The figure that was being bandied about by people who may be in the know was R1 billion, and I don't know, R1 billion is substantial considering that Gallo Music only sold for R50 million. And that shows an incredible amount of leverage because Gallo has a much bigger back catalog, much more lucrative back catalog than what Maven have. And I don't know what terms Maven negotiated with the current acts. So, for example, I don't know if they've retained the rights to Timo Savage's work. You know what I mean? I don't know what the reversion clauses are there, but let's assume that it's just their current catalog. Just based on their current catalog, what Don Jazzy has been able to do is incredible, especially with Aria Star and Rema alone. That's a feat. And I think prior to this, I would always sing the praises of Don Jazzy. And I remember getting into an argument with someone on Twitter where they're like, who's the most influential person in Afrobeats? And I said, Don Jazzy. It's not even a debate. And people were having a back and forth with me. And I was like, I'm not debating this with you. If you guys do not understand the influence this man has, and the power he wields, then like I'm wasting my time. And I think now he cemented it. So going back to your original question, if Don Jazzy is able to show value that Universal wants to invest to that level, to that extent, then that money is going to circulate in Africa. The thing is, obviously, if a venture capitalist operate on the assumption that they're going to 20x their investment. I don't know what Universal's numbers are, but obviously if they're spending that much on the label, they expect a certain level of return. So it's obviously worth more than that, but they have access to markets. They have access to pipelines. They have access What, are you playing the Oscar music? What the hell's going on over there, Dad?
Sorry, Phil. Please go ahead. Go ahead. I'm just going to mute.
They have access to resources that we don't have. And that's the thing that we also need to be pragmatic about in Zim and in Africa is we need access to the rest of the world. We need to find strategic partners to allow us access to the rest of the world. So in as much as we want to retain value, it has to be a strategic move and it has to be a fair exchange. And now Dan is taking a phone call. Who could he be speaking to, guys? Who do you think? Let's put some votes in the comment. Is it a side chick? Is it work? Could it be a government official?
I was just trying to call Don Jazzy. Sorry, my bad.
Well, of course you are. Sure.
Yeah. No, it's... I spent 3 days with Don Jazzy. Do you remember that workshop? It was all those years ago. Interesting times. Cool people. I have a photo with him somewhere. I need to put that out there and just, you know, and then just put a, hey man, congratulations on the $150 million deal. Can I go see Victor?
Also, I'm thinking, do I want to touch it or not? Guys, stand up. Like, you guys are embarrassing. That's what I'm going to say. You're embarrassing. Like, you're all embarrassing.
Stand up, Philip. Someone's
pillar of strength is busy. I can't think of debasing myself to say, yo, my man, so what? Can I go see Victor too? Yo, shoot me in the back of the head. Two bullets back of the head, please. Do not hesitate. You have my right. You have my express permission. To embarrass myself like that? Never. God help.
Oh, yeah. Okay, anyway, let's move on. So I don't know if you came across this story, Philip. People were talking about it today and yesterday. South African of Zimbabwean descent, Shamiso Mosaka.
Dude, her dad is Zimbabwean.
That's why I said South African of Zimbabwean descent.
But also, why do we care? Like, a celebrity got kicked off a flight and they were live streaming it because they felt aggrieved. Like, boo-hoo. Like, it happens all the time. Boo-hoo.
Yeah. I don't know what the... You know what? The only real angle to this is... This is going to sound silly. The debate that I saw was, yeah, but she mustn't be... unruly in public. And that was from a very few people. And honestly, there's nothing actually worth talking about on this.
You know what I mean? Like, some of these things, like, Shamiso's, she doesn't need us. She's going to be fine. Like, if what she says is true. And
okay, just because she's South African, she's not Shamiso. Shamiso.
Just like, if what she says is true and there were witnesses and she live streamed the police coming to take her off, but the people said that what was alleged did not happen, she'll obviously have some form of retribution. She has a powerful name. She has a powerful father. Okay, not powerful, but a famous father. I mean, it'll be handled. You know what I mean? You know? Crims, let's deal with things that are pertinent, you know, big issues. Celebrities being kicked off. Like, if she gave birth on the flight, let's talk about that. If she dropped a deuce so potent, the plane had to turn around because they're like, there's poop everywhere.
Why would we talk about that? If she on that flight, let's say she disappeared, and now we must wonder where is Shamiso.
You know, Krims, top of the document. You don't even need to put intro. That is the intro. We are leading. We are starting the podcast there.
Also, you know, social media has been awash with the gender wars. Should men pay 50-50? That's what other podcasts talk about, not this one. You know what I'm saying? So, not at all. All right, hold on. No, hold on one second.
I know you're bringing this up because Krims had put Cardi B on the thing, which, to be fair, I don't care. But Dan, what I do care about is this. Ooh.
Okay.
you see this video? Yeah. Look, me versus you and you know they pick it. Cheap and expensive, you know the difference. You know that it's tan, you know what it's giving. Hair, nails, put a bear. I can survive in the coldest conditions. Smell all day, tone when they spin. Just wash, soap in the dishes. I apply pressure like boa constrictors. One, two, oh, new. None of y'all not gon' do. I'm in Miami, I pull up on cruise ship. You in Miami for also rooms. When I step, a stampede. Foot on neck, can't breathe. Lucky charm, Van Cleef. Diamonds on, I see my eyes linking up. What in the? If you scared, then just say that enough is enough. They was just in my DMs. Ain't no trust in these. I'm about to call up Diamond. Nug, if you I linking up. I'm like, what in the? If you scared, then just say that enough. Nah, Cardi back. This is a bop. This is a bop.
It's fine. You know.
Nah, then it's you not become bad. That old man. You become that old.
I have become that, but it's fine. I don't want. I listen to a lot of the stuff and I'm just like, feels like it was made for TikTok. Do a dance, then we move on, you know? That's what it feels like to me.
Anyway, all right, cool.
But it's not bad. It's not bad. That's just my feelings about it. Anyway, yeah, that's why I was talking. That's why you played Cardi B and Offset, because of that whole, yeah. Producer Creams, we don't want to talk about men and women going 50-50. That's, you know, okay, Phil, you know, I was actually thinking about this week. Our listeners are, let's say they're more, I would like to think that the average Two Broke Twimbles listener is in the upper half when we are discussing average intelligence. I would like to think so. And this is not a science or academia podcast, but I would like to think that we often have more cerebral topics. And for that reason, some of our listeners are smart asses.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the rough words that we had, that we discussed at the beginning of the podcast. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, other podcasts are gonna be like, bro, would you hit your ex if your ex was hitting your bro's ex, huh? You know what I'm saying? And that's, you know, of course, at times we're going to touch about social issues and we're going to talk about our personal experiences and all of that. Of course, I mean, we're human beings and we're just chatting. But this is not... You know, this is not one of those podcasts where it's all about engagement baiting and gender wars. And I know this is the most controversial topic. So if we say this, then people are going to be like, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying this mainly for the benefit of our producer, but I just in general for our listeners as well.
If only we had like an internal meeting system where we could discuss with our producer and not the public, but okay.
Rick Ross is wearing a fake watch. And
no, it's actually funny. So, I don't follow Nick Arunad. I think once in a while, I'll maybe watch a jewelry video. But this thing popped up. And I think it popped up because YouTube knows when something's about to go viral. I think YouTube pushed it because when I saw that video, it was only like 100,000 followers. Nick Arunad does not have a big channel. Like it's big-ish, but it's a, but anyway, Nick Arunad is a Dutch jeweler
that has I've come across him before. Yeah.
Yeah. That has his own channel. And then like he started reviewing rappers' watches. And in that video, he also looks at Tyler the Creator's collection and he's like, wow, this is like Tyler's got this like, eclectic collection of Cartiers. He roasts Pharrell and that terrible AP watch that's like the Ferrari AP watch that's like $3 million that looks like a slab. And then he's like, Rick Ross, like these watches are okay, but this watch here, there's only one of these in the world that's a 42 millimeter Rick Ross. And I know the owner and that's not you. So what's going on here, buddy? What's happening? And then I think we have to get Rick Ross's response. Let me get Rick, because Rick Ross needs to go back to primary school. You know, like, so Rick Ross also does not know how a pig sounds. So have you ever watched that video, Dan?
I haven't watched the video. This is the first time I'm even seeing this story at all.
So it's hilarious for that part. And then he also says, yo, this is a fat guy. get out of that cubicle. And I don't think Rick Ross knew who he was dealing with. Like, I think he assumed this was like an internet troll. And then in his response, Nick was like, I bet. So he hops in the back of his Phantom, starts recording in his Phantom, and then goes to shoot the video in his garage. And in his garage, he's got a Phantom, he's got a SLR, he's got a Pagani, and he's got a Ferrari. And they all have the custom number plates of his company. So like, you know, they're his cars. And he's like, listen, my dudes, okay, you might not have heard about me. But he's also being self-deprecating. And it's hilarious because in his response, Rick Ross does not actually refute the claim. He just says like, why are you hating on a black man? Like, you don't think a black man can afford this thing? It's like, and then Rick Ross starts showing off his cars. He's like, listen, Rick Ross, I never said you can't afford it. I merely said, and let me explain it to you slowly. The watch you claim that is part of this collection does not exist. Because what you have, there's two things, right? There's what they call an aftermarket watch, which is like a bust down, where people will take like a Rolex Daytona or Day-Date or whatever, and a jeweler will apply rubies or diamonds to it, which is what hip-hoppers call a bust down watch. In actuality, it devalues it reduces the value of the watch, but he's like, that it's still a Rolex. It's just a Rolex that has been modified. That Rolex with all the diamonds is not going to appear in the Rolex sales catalog because it's a custom piece made by a jeweler. They take an original watch and they add diamonds to it. That's a modified watch. You are more than happy. Like, I have no problems with that. Like, what you choose to do with your money is your money. However, what you have displayed is a watch that does appear in the AP sales catalog. There's only one of it. It's so rare that when AP wants to display it, they have to rent it back from the owner of that watch because it comes in a set of six. And it's like, I think the whole set is like valued at $20 million. It's an insane amount of money. And that watch that you're wearing is made to look like that. So if something is made to look like something, but it isn't that, that is a replica or a fake. And then he proceeds to start digging into Rick Ross's collection. He's like, okay, since you ought to be funny. Anyway, you wore this. This is fake. This is fake. This is fake. This one is fake. This one is fake. This one is fake. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, here's me showing you that I know the owner because the owner of the original watch took a photo of the original watch and wrote the guy's name on it and said like, see? So Rick Ross, all I'm asking you is, do you know this person too? Or do you buy a fake? Which one is it?
So just doing a quick read on it, he said there's only one of these watches in the world at 41 mil and there's another one at 37 millimeters. So he says there's more coming in the future, but because of the complexity and the difficulty to find these stones, there's currently only one in the world at 41 millimeters. Can you explain me this, Rick Ross? And then he says, why are you flaunting a fake watch and saying that watch is worth 3.25 million, man? I thought you had to be an example for the youth, etc. Mate, load of balls, get your act together. This is pathetic. You know, Did you say Rick Ross said the other guy was fat?
Yes, it's that. And you called him a pig. And then he was like, you're a fat pig. And he goes, hee-haw.
Rick Ross said this.
Yes, Rick Ross called him a fat pig. And they went, hee-haw.
Look, I know Rick Ross has been on a heavy weight loss journey. And he's done wonders.
It's true. But,
I mean, I don't, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's sad. And you know what, Phil? This really speaks to the consumer culture. And not just the consumer culture. It's just the deep desire to be ostentatious with one's riches. That leads to these embarrassing situations where if you had just bought one of the Audemars that was on the catalog and had it shipped to you, you could have flossed properly. But no, you have to have the one that exists, one of one in the world. You could just, obviously what probably happened is his jeweler or whoever does his shopping for him either duped him or was duped himself. I doubt that he knows that the intricacies of Audemars.
Yeah, that happens all the time. So I've been lucky enough to meet with some people that own some fine watches. And they were breaking down the process to me, which I was somewhat unfamiliar with. You know, like now I'm a little better with. So Daniel, like with some of these watches, even like a Daytona, which really wasn't a popular watch until John Mayer was seen wearing it, which is an interesting fun fact. Like with some of these watches, you have to get on the list. So like for the desirable watches, which is a great hustle for watchmakers. To get the like the desired watches, you have to buy the crappy watches or the entry level watches, which then puts you on the customer list. And then when you're on the customer list, when they tell you, oh, this watch is coming out, they'll then be like, I bet you can register on the list. We'll have it available in so and so months. And then they'll just call you one day and they'll be like, yo, that watch that you wanted is available. The waiting list has got X amount of people. Would you like to secure it? Please give us an answer by this date. Otherwise, we'll call the next person. So it's a great hustle when you think about it, because you're never producing excess of stock. You know what I mean? You're not sitting on dead stock, especially like the valuable stuff. So sometimes to jump that, people will then go through these dealers like Nico, who might have the hookup to get these watches off list. And instead of having to wait 6 months or 12 months, you get it, ebop. But the risk being is if they're not reputable, this might happen. And there's a lot of stories of rappers who, like, I don't know if you remember that story of Lil Baby. Lil Baby flashed a watch, and then I think a fake watch buster told him, yo, my mans, that watch isn't real. And then, quite hilariously, within 7 days, the jeweler returned the money and a very sincere apology on Instagram. I just said, my bad. I'm sorry, Lil Baby, about that. So, you know, that's probably the good side of it. But also the bad side is when you have narrow.
You'll never boomer. You'll just keep quiet. If you get a bag, would you get into like watch collecting and buy $1 million watches?
I would like to think no, but the thing is, it's always easy to theorize money you don't have. You know what I mean?
No, I know. I just mean, is that something that your mind is interested? Because I'm interested in watches to a certain extent, but I don't think I'd ever pay like millions for it.
Like, maybe like for me, I'd probably just get like the entry level. Like for me, like that level of conspicuous consumption. Like I don't know if you can see, like even behind me, like there's my sneaker collection. I've halved my sneaker. It's not like my sneaker collection was insane. I just stopped and I thought about it. I was like, especially like when you're moving, you realize like the more you possess, the more stressful it is. You know what I mean? So I'm deliberately trying to like reduce the amount of stuff I own. I don't see the benefit of holding, like, even a watch. The rationale by a lot of these people is a watch retains value. So it's like an investment almost. But I'm like, if the world comes to an end and like global systems collapse, what good is a watch going to be?
Yeah, you could say that about so many things, Philip.
Sneakers, yes, but no, but then a sneaker that I pay MSR, I don't like, I don't even buy my sneakers from resale, right? So the most I've spent on this.
What good would money even be? It would be worth nothing.
But you're missing the point, Dan.
No, I
wouldn't
I
have money.
I understand.
I wouldn't have
money. Spend, but.
I wouldn't have the money. I would have a bunker with gold and rations and water.
Gold, if the world ends, let's just assume society collapses. And now all of a sudden we're in Mad Max world. I don't think gold would have that much value.
It's still a precious metal in the fact that if we were to rebuild technology and electricity, like gold and platinum would still have some form of value.
Yeah, that's very long-term thinking. What so, you need to get, Philip, what you need to get is cigarettes. You stock up on cigarettes. Have a mad stock of cigarettes. Because everyone who's addicted needs access to them, and they'll be willing to trade anything for one bump. You know what I'm saying? Think ahead.
You're missing a bump of cigarettes, Dan. I don't. Do you know how cigarettes work?
You're focusing on the wrong thing.
Do you know how cigarettes work?
I don't smoke. Focusing on the wrong thing. The point is, stock up on cigarettes.
Yeah, guys, don't snort all your cigarettes at once.
Don't inject them. All right. We've spoken a couple times.
Crims. Crims. What's going on here, brah? Crims. You know, let's let our listeners decide. Listen, these are the two topics our esteemed producers lined up for us. One is Sierra shuts down the Vanity Fair Oscars party in curve hugging couture. Sierra turned heads last night on March 10th at the Vanity Fair Oscars after party in a stunning nude gown that left fans in awe of her curvaceous figure. This is a great topic to discuss on an audio podcast. Yes.
Maybe I'm I should be, maybe I'm short-adding this topic. Maybe it's a topic with, let me click on this link and see how far.
She's wearing a dress, Dan. So what? Like, I don't understand.
Look. Yeah, no, definitely you know not what? Worth talking you know about, what? But.
You know what? I too would be impregnating this woman at every opportunity. That's all I'll say. That's all. Yeah. Yes. Speaking of thickums, here's another highlight from our producer. Oprah Winfrey reveals why she quit Weight Watchers board of directors. Entertainment mogul and TV talk show host Oprah Winfrey said she decided to exit the board of directors of Weight Watchers after nearly a decade to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest. Guys, she's on Ozempic. Like what? Like what are you talking about? She admitted to being on Ozempic.
I was swiftly going to skip those to discuss the Kanye West and Kai Cenat situation.
Ah, it's even worse. Good Lord.
But yeah,
we need to stop giving Kanye a platform. Like I think Cat Williams said it best. On so many of them. But if we know he's a little special, if we know he's a little touched, why do we keep getting shocked by the things he says? What Kanye West does, I don't care anymore. Like I've divested from the Kanye West train. And it hurts me.
Did you see Kai Cenat posted that he was doing a tour of Nigeria? So he posted his flyer of Kai Cenat touring Nigeria and it had a zebra on it. So everyone in Nigeria was like, yo.
But isn't Kai Cenat Nigerian?
I think, you know, when they say they're Nigerian in the sense that I took 23andMe and I've got Nigerian, you know what I mean? I feel like that's how they say it. I don't know if he's Nigerian, because that's such a funny thing that happened. So obviously all the Nigerians were like, why is there a zebra?
Why? Zebras aren't even native to West Africa. Like, what the fuck? But also, I think one fun discussion that, and a nerdy discussion that I want to delve deeper into when I get the time is, obviously, Universal have removed their music from TikTok. So that's created opportunities for other artists who still. I send it to me, Dan. You know, like you can send this technology, you can send it to me and I don't have to.
Just look at it. It's less work than sending it. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah. So Universal Music removed their stuff from TikTok.
That creates an opportunity for the other labels that still are on TikTok to make hits. And obviously, we've been seeing Tito M's song, Bolawam, really blowing up. Kai Cenat even did a video on TikTok about it. And we've been discussing it recently.
It's on Universal.
No. He's okay. Actually on AfriCore. So Warner.
Okay.
What's funny about that and what's interesting about that song is the dance that they're doing, the original video was not to that song. And I find that fascinating. That like...
So they did a dance and then they just added the song.
Yeah. So if you watch the original video, they're not dancing to that song. They're dancing to another song. The guys with the bleached hair and they're doing that move and then there's that woman hyping them in the background. That was the original dance move. And then somehow, Tito M's song became the official song of that dance move and that movement, even though it wasn't the original video that started that wave. Ooh, and I find that fascinating.
That artist must be pissed.
And not only that, like, just this week, obviously it's a bit of a small sample size because it's Apple Music, but I saw a tweet that for the first time in 2 years, the number one song on Apple Music Nigeria is a South African song that doesn't feature any Nigerians. So, and I think in the group, someone from Africa, we shared that they were now like at number 67 on the global Billboard charts. So it's blowing up. And I think that's going to be interesting to see over the next few weeks how artists who aren't on Universal might be benefiting from Universal not being on TikTok.
I think in the short term, but I think in the long term, fewer people will get, because what's made TikTok so successful, right? It's not like it has. Okay, so one thing obviously is the algorithm. Apparently it has a great algorithm that, you know, anyone who's used TikTok will tell you that if you just use it for a little bit, it starts showing you things that you actually like, right? So it's got a great algorithm to figure out your likes and so on. The other thing was, it's so easy. There's no rules. You can share everything everywhere. You can download, you can share, you can repost, you can put music, you can, everything is just so easy to do. So that ease of entry plus the excellent algorithm just made it so easy. Even video editing, their tools were so easy. Someone who has no experience or idea of video editing is now making like amazing transitions and whatever. Now, obviously, I know Instagram and whatever. I've tried to copy some of those things. But still, everything about TikTok is so easy. So that's what's made it so successful. And I think it's gone past the point of critical mass, right? Where you don't have to worry about that anymore. It's now got so many users. But if the biggest music label in the world does not have its music on there anymore, upwards of 50% of original music is taken off the platform. And potentially it's no longer available in America. I think within the coming months and years, that ease of entry and everything's available and you can do everything so easily is just no longer going to be an option. It's no longer a driving force. And as time goes on, fewer and fewer people are using it, making it less relevant, which means you're not really able to push your music that much on there anymore. I suspect that's what's going to happen down the line. So in the short term, yes, artists who are not on Universal, you get a big boost because now your music is the one that's available. But in the long term, I don't think TikTok will survive both those things, Universal and losing the American audience.
I think it will. It's already proven it can. It's already proven it can survive without Universal.
Let me rephrase. Obviously, it will survive. I just mean, I think it will lose relevance and it will exist the same way. What can I use in this example? SoundCloud still exists. It's a thing. It exists. There's still people posting stuff on there, but.
It's always interesting hearing your views. SoundCloud is actually really, like SoundCloud has done four quarters of probability. Granted, it's not what it used to be, but SoundCloud is still very, as an industry tool, it's still very powerful.
Yes. And my point is, don't forget still works, that. It's still valuable, but it's no longer as relevant as it used to be.
But SoundCloud has also shifted their model where SoundCloud is now a very important platform. That's the backbone of, I think the last statistic was 12% of all major podcasts are hosted on SoundCloud. So that's still very relevant. It's just diversified. So I was looking at the stats. So obviously TikTok has 2 billion users. Its highest user base is indeed in America, 148 million.
Isn't it 1.2 billion, Philip? Not 2 billion. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
I do think they'll survive without Americans.
It will survive. Don't get me wrong. But it won't be. It will obviously lose not just a little bit of relevance, but a lot of relevance. I mean, let's face it. Americans are the really dramatic group of people that are pushing a lot of these things. Things rarely go viral outside of America on TikTok.
I think you're discounting and you're not considering the importance of community. So we just gave the example of Cheetah Wet, right? That video was shared by South Africans sharing South African content and South African culture. It then got picked up by more South Africans and then eventually the rest of Africa, the world, etc. Americans were devoid of that whole process up until it reached viral status. So, and there's communities like that, multiple communities that are like that, that exist on TikTok already that don't necessarily rely on Americans. Yes, there's some of the biggest creators are definitely American because America is the biggest ad base. So that's where people are monetizing. But the cheese can move. Like, it's still very possible for people to figure that out. And who's not to say that China might not see a strategic advantage and be like, you know what? We've been very closed off because the second biggest user base for TikTok is actually in China, but it doesn't count because it's a different company in China, right?
Yeah, I was about to say TikTok is not even available in China.
But under ByteDance, it's a different app. But what if China now then says, you know what? Cool, we've now wiped out. Because the reason all this is happening is...
It's not a different app. There's a different app owned by the same company. But TikTok doesn't exist in China.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, the reason all this is happening is,
which is wild, by the way,
China and the United States are adversaries right now, right? Yeah. In the same way, and there is definitely a level of xenophobia, but there's also, I understand what's going on. And it's in some instances, it's a common sense argument, which is China does not allow America, certain American apps in China. Sometimes that almost, is the choice of the companies.
Yeah, yeah, almost all.
And some, and sometimes that is the choice of the apps themselves because of the stringent privacy violations that the Chinese government demands of these apps. So they've chosen to neglect operating there. As on the flip side, they're like, wait, Americans are, or American politicians are like, if they're doing that for our apps, why are we allowing them so much control here? And obviously the big fear is how this can control the zeitgeist popular opinion to see, which is also, to be fair, a fair concern. If you look at, there's certain news that I've seen on TikTok that I've only been able to see on TikTok. And I mean, APEC has come out and said it point blank, that like, yo, TikTok's a problem because it's not making us look good in Palestine right now, yo. So there is value there. I think the set of dominoes it's going to set off, ultimately it's going to harm America more than anyone.
Okay, so obviously I don't know exactly what's going to happen, and it's not like I'm paying very close attention. I'm just sharing my initial thoughts. So we may as well get into it. Let's ombuds. For those of you who may not be aware, we spoke about the fact that Universal Music Group is beefing with TikTok, and now they've taken off all their music from TikTok, the platform. Universal Music Group, as we've spoken about, is the biggest music label in the world. They claim that they have even up to 50% of all music on TikTok is under Universal Music Group. So as you go, as it is right now, if you go on TikTok and you try to attach a song to any of your videos, you cannot use any of the video, any of the songs that are under Universal's catalog. And that spans a large number of artists. And that's not only artists under Universal, but any composers, writers, features, et cetera, et cetera. Secondly, last week, in US Congress, a bill was passed. It still has to go through the Senate, I believe, and then ultimately has to be signed by the president. But the president said he would sign it, was passed to ban TikTok from use in America. Now, the reason ostensibly that they give is that TikTok is a Chinese company, and Chinese companies are very closely linked to the Chinese Communist Party, because for a major company to operate in China, it has to be linked to the government. So therefore, such an influential app is under Chinese control. We cannot have that happening. But I think there's obviously more to consider. So I think there's two main issues here, right? Number one, the issue of privacy. So the issue of privacy is, if this company that is Chinese has access to all this data of US citizens, that is dangerous. That argument somewhat falls a little bit flat on its face, in the sense that, what information are you talking about? Which dances are viral or what? Of course, I mean, you could talk about information you can get from the device, etc. But considering that in America, the majority of devices that are used by that age range of people who use TikTok are iPhones, and iPhones have very closed ecosystems, so etc. You know, long story short, there is some data that they'll be able to collect, but it's not individual data. It's not like you'll be able to identify who's, you know, the journalist that's writing bad things about China using TikTok. But that is a concern. And sometimes also we don't know all the information. So data and privacy is a big concern. The second concern is influence. And the idea of influence is what Phil was intimating right now, which is, because this app is controlled by a Chinese company, is it possible that the algorithm could be influenced to, for example, make the average American feel better towards China? That feels a little bit on the nose, and it's unlikely that would happen. But let's just say China and America are adversaries. China knows that, you know, one of the biggest issues in America right now is race. Could we tweak the algorithm to start putting race baiting discussions and issues on the forefront of algorithms? Because that will enrage people more, and that will destabilize the country. That, I think, is very possible. TikTok insists that it's not possible because the headquarters are actually in Singapore and the US. Yes, ByteDance is a Chinese company, but they don't have any say in how the algorithm is run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, what you can believe what you want, but obviously the fact that something so influential could potentially influence people in that way, I don't know. I find it difficult to believe that. I find it difficult to believe that TikTok would tweak the algorithm to start showing more about Palestine so that the Jews would start feeling more heat because many of them are in positions. It just feels very far-fetched. It feels like a James Bond movie. And again, I do believe conspiracies exist, but I'm a little bit iffy. So I, on the overall, just as I've been saying this, I do agree with you, Phil, that I think the biggest sufferer of TikTok being banned and Universal Music taking their music off of TikTok is the average American user. I think they're the ones. TikTok is recently overtook. Facebook? I think recently overtook many of the other social media platforms in terms of amount of time spent on the platform. So the average American spends more time on TikTok than any other social media platform. So this is going to be a big miss for them, right? And as I mentioned earlier, the reason TikTok was so popular is because it was so easy to just get caught up in content because it was so easy. And it was what content that you liked was recommended. So my question was, or my thinking is, losing the 170 million American audience, losing 50% of the catalog of music, which was probably in many cases the most used music on the platform from Universal Music Group. I think that makes the barrier to using TikTok lower, and that means it's going to lose its it feels like it's obvious it's going to lose some of its relevance if the American audience goes. But I think that these are death knells for TikTok. 2 years from now, 3 years from now, it's still going to exist and it's still going to be relevant, but it's going to be far less relevant than it is today. 5 years from now, it's going to be even far less. That's my thinking. That's how I see things going. I think that in 5 years' time, TikTok is going to be Snap, just bigger. Snap still exists. There's still people that use it, formerly Snapchat. It still has its communities on there. There's still discoverability going on there, but it is nothing compared to what it was at its peak. And I think that's what's going to happen to TikTok.
But all this is also premised on a very big hypothetical. And your hypothetical is that the Senate and the President passed this bill, yes, which forces the sale of ByteDance, the sale of TikTok from ByteDance. ByteDance refuses to sell, so they just exit the American market. And after doing so, there is absolutely no consequence to the people in Congress and the Senate. And as you joked about last week, it was funny, but it's true. Because TikTok is so influential, if they are indeed banned, and then the users decide, you know what, we've had enough, we're going to show our displeasure at the polls, surely...
kind of proves it.
Yeah, but then that's also going to be like, all right, so maybe we should have to reverse our stance on this. Keep it in mind, when a less severe bill had been tenured 2 years ago, which was that the data had to be stored by American servers, ByteDance did broker a deal with Oracle. So they could
but
just...
never went through, right? Yeah, never went through.
Yeah, yeah. So they could just go back to that and be like, you know what, actually, you know what, the banning doesn't make sense. Let's just secure the data of the American users. Keeping also in mind that ByteDance is not doing anything that Meta and Twitter and Google don't already do.
Yeah. So on the issue of data privacy, Meta and Google are it's very difficult to quantify this, but could be even worse. Don't forget going back to the days of Cambridge Analytica and whatever, which was a bit blown out of proportion, but still was a big cry about data. And on the issue of influence, was it TikTok that influenced the US election? No, it was Twitter and Facebook. So when we're talking about foreign influence, those are the ones that should also be banned. Although, Phil, you know what? If Steve Mnuchin comes through and is the savior of TikTok, then of course everything is saved now. Then you know it'll be all good. Then you know it'll be all good. Let's go on to movies and television, Philip. So I already spoke to you about the movie I watched, Poor Things, with Emma Stone, with a very disturbing premise. But I thought about it earlier and then it exited my head as I was talking about it. So I want to bring it back now. movies are not lessons. Sometimes they are, but that's not the purpose of it. Oftentimes it's a mirror to society. It's entertainment. It's information. It's education. It's not meant to be a moral lesson. So for example, if something really bad happens, let's just say this, in this example I spoke about, Poor Things shows a depiction of some weird, could be statutory rape, but it's full grown body, but the mind, anyway, there's a debate about that. Is it bad for highlighting or showing that? Surely a movie is not supposed to be, everything that happens in this movie is good. A movie will have a murder in it. It doesn't mean it's endorsing murder. I hope it doesn't. But it's reflecting society. It's telling a story. Maybe it's even entertaining. You could decide that, you know what, I don't want to expose myself to this, so I'm not going to watch that, which is very fair. And listen, if you're a little bit questioning about that, skip Poor Things. Yeah, because I won't lie. I was watching that, like, I was a little like, because it felt off. But I don't think movies should shy away from controversial issues. They're a reflection of what's in society, or they're a reflection of humanity, or they are discussing something that's happening, or, you know, any manner of things like that. A lot of people were very upset at, what's that movie with Bilbo Baggins and Wednesday?
What a description. With Bilbo Baggins, I don't know. What is this movie? Give me the premise.
What's that movie? The premise of the movie is, I haven't watched it and I don't intend to watch it because I hear it's a very bad movie. But the premise of this movie is Bilbo Baggins, I think it's Martin Freeman, is that his name? He plays a college teacher, and Jenna Ortega plays his student. And then they end up having an affair in this movie or something like that. And a lot of people are outraged. Ah, how could you do this? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yo, that's what happens in society. Here's a movie reflecting society, which leads to discussion about it. That shouldn't, but also, shouldn't not some, make the movie because also, that happens.
Fiction does not have to reflect society. Sometimes art can just be art. And this obsession with, I was trying to remember, there was a book that I came across years and years ago. There's a series of them. But this is a book from like the 18th century. And in this book, there's an island, and there's a group of men, like wealthy men, who live on this island. And then they have young boys all over this island who they, for lack of a better term, sexually assault. I'm trying to tone it down as much as possible. And this is a book that existed, and it's graphic, it's horrific. That island might exist, that island might not exist. That might have been a result of the author's imagination, their worst desires, their worst fantasies, whatever that may be, but it exists. I don't think it's our place to censor fiction.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It's not our place. And I think it's stupid. What we should be doing is holding as a community, as a society, have social mores that don't harm people, don't do this, don't do that, and enforce those. What also this does, as you rightly mentioned, is it allows us to be like, hey, we might not even know this exists, but this obviously, this is the result of a sick mind or someone with a dark imagination. Let's not cast aspersions. So in the event that this were to come to pass in reality, what should we do? How should we approach it? You know what I mean? Wouldn't it be better to have those tough discussions before something happens, not after? You know what I mean?
Let's be fair. If someone can imagine it, it's probably happened.
You know what I mean? But it hasn't come. But if it hasn't come to the public light,
sometimes it doesn't have to lead to discussions. Sometimes it's a piece of fiction.
Exactly.
And each of us have the responsibility to decide that, you know what, this is too dark for me, or this is too, that subject matter doesn't sit well with me, or it triggers me, or I don't like this discussion, or whatever the case is, I would prefer not to consume that. And that's absolutely fine. But I would prefer it doesn't exist, I think is messed up. I think it's fair for me to say, you know what? I don't want to watch a movie that deals with ABC type of content. I don't want to be consuming that. I don't want that in my mind. But I don't think it's fair for me to say I don't think it should exist. Because if someone can imagine it and can put it out in the world, of course, there must be, you know, guardrails in place to make sure that maybe people underage or people who might not suspect or know what is in there are fully aware of what's going to be in that particular content. Perfect. But overall, I think fiction can exist even with some of the darkest of humanity in it, imagined or real or whatever the case is. And it can exist there. And if there's enough people who want to consume it, why not make it exist? The argument against it, obviously, is that you don't want to influence people. There could be someone who's somewhat pushed over the edge because they had dark imaginations, but then now they've seen it acted out or they've seen it play out, and that makes them act out on it. I think that's
the video game theory all over again. The agreement
in the scientific community is that that's not a thing.
Yep. I guess, but at the same time, that's the Grand Theft Auto argument all over again. Come on, guys, I'm still having these arguments.
But at the same time, let's not pretend that there are no people with mental health issues or learning disabilities or whatever the case, like all kinds of issues that can exist. I think as long as guardrails are put in place to make sure that, for example, people who are underage or people who may not be sure what this is about or carers of people, you know, as long as you're aware of all of this, stuff should exist, man. Let it exist. If there's enough people, if there's no one who wants to consume it because it's that bad, then you can tell me that it shouldn't exist because no one wants this. Fine.
But also the market will decide. If no one wants it to exist, then what is it? Remember, Dan, there's that movie. We used to joke about it on Twitter back in the day when people would ask for movie recommendations and we'd recommend this and it was a horrible movie. I think it was a Ukrainian or Bulgarian movie that involved like graphic rape and stuff. Like, what is it called?
I never recommended anything. That, I don't know.
It was just like an ongoing movie.
It was called... I forgot. I know the one you're talking about. It's not one I've watched, nor would I ever want to watch just reading its description. But if someone were like, oh, I'm looking for something to watch this weekend, I'm like, oh no, why didn't you try this? Which was messed up. We shouldn't have been doing that. I do believe there's limits and there's boundaries and it will be different for different societies. I don't think we can all just sit back and say, yeah, no, it's okay. Just show us 2 hours of, you know, gory massacre. I mean, like, okay, no, now you're just taking the piss. You know what I'm saying? But in general, I think we shouldn't try to censor fiction. We as individuals can decide not to consume it if we don't want it. Or if you're a parent, you may decide to shield your children until they're an adult from particular things. Fine, fair and fine. But as an individual, you have that responsibility. I don't think you should do that for other people. Anyway, that having been said, I also watched Dune Part 2.
How was that?
I was transported. It was excellent. Excellent.
So here's a fun fact. I actually had not watched the first Dune movie. And then I was feeling sick yesterday. So I came down to have something to eat. And Dark Knight was on. And I was like, you know, I want to go back to it. But it's Dark Knight. Ah, damn it. I'm watching Dark Knight. What a movie. Like Dark Knight. Like, excellent. What a classic. And immediately after Dark Knight, they were showing Dune. I was like, you know, I haven't watched it. Let me watch this movie. I was like, okay. I'm being this. But then I actually felt bad because I'm like, I know and I've known that George Lucas stole a lot of the lore from Dune and put it in Star Wars. Obviously, Star Wars became a movie first. It was never a book. And I kind of felt bad because I haven't read the Dune books. And I'm like, if I had the time, I would love to read the books because this world seems so engaging. And the themes of religion and like the Messiah and all that stuff are things that I would be fascinated to read about.
So let me get into my nerd bag. So I read Dune when I was in high school. Dune is a laborious read.
All of them.
Easy read.
All of them.
No. I think I read Dune and maybe Dune Messiah. I can't remember. Maybe one and two. But I definitely read Dune. There's like six of them. I haven't read all of them. It's a labor to read. It's not easy. It's like, it's politics and dialogue and exposition and theory and all of that. But it is an incredible world, like you said. So Frank Herbert and Tolkien low-key beefed. Because Tolkien's entire idea of his fiction or his work of fiction and the world he built was good versus bad, good always triumphs over evil. Whereas Frank Herbert, his belief, by the way, when Tolkien read Frank Herbert's Dune, he was like, yeah, no, I don't like this. Frank Herbert said he didn't believe in the idea of good and bad. As far as he was concerned, it was greed versus survival, you know, those kind of things. So the world that he built is actually not about who are the good guys, who are the bad guys. It's literally powerful families throughout the universe that are beefing. You may like some more than the others, or some may be more brutal than others, etc. But ultimately, none of them are really good or bad guys. And you may identify, I think Dune really paints, for example, the Harkonnens as the bad guys. And to a certain extent, they are. But they're just a family who's fighting for power just as much as the Atreides are. Anyway, so then he said, Frank Herbert, he was disappointed that people who read and loved his book liked Paul Atreides. Because he had created this, what he called a messianic figure, which was someone who was going to come and save everyone. But his intention when writing the book was he wanted to caution people that don't just trust someone who comes and, you know, who says all these amazing things and then takes the lead. And then all of a sudden you have a bunch of belief in him, a la Trump or a la whatever, you know, because very often they have their own nefarious agendas. And in fact, in here, he's got the whole Bene Gesserit, meaning basically a lot of the religious beliefs are actually implanted to you by da, 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 da. And then there's this figure, Paul Atreides, who you think is a savior, but he's actually not a savior. But when people finish reading Dune, they're like, oh my God, Paul is amazing. He saved them. And he's like, no, you guys didn't understand what I said. So then he wrote Dune Messiah, which Dune Messiah was, it was never meant to be necessarily a continuation of the story. It was meant to be like a footnote and almost like, just a heads up. Paul Atreides is actually, harmful. And then from there it built now into dynasties and so on. So just a little bit of backstory there about Frank Herbert. By the way, don't feel so bad about Frank Herbert, because he was like, I don't know, he was in there with that whole squad of Scientology and all those peoples.
Mm. Well, L. Ron Hubbard was also a very prolific science fiction writer. One day we need to explore that. Like, there's something there. I think it's like community. Maybe that's what attracts people to Scientology. You know what I mean? I think we need to delve deep into that.
No thanks. I'm cool. There's some documentaries if you want to delve deeper. I'm cool. Anyway, I mean, if you're like super nerd, again, Dune is, like, don't take your date to Dune. You know what I'm saying? Unless you know she or he is a nerd like that. It's not a type of movie. There's a lot of conversation. And I love Denis Villeneuve, who's the director of Dune. He came out and he said he hates dialogue. He actually said, I think dialogue is for TV. Of course, he wasn't saying that there mustn't be dialogue in movies. He was making reference to in terms of exploring the story or exposition. So he was like, I don't want to tell, I want to show. And he does it. So like in Dune, you have to understand so much about, there's this political balance and then there's this person who has more power, but then this person, he doesn't say any of that. It's just subtle looks and subtle, you know, like movements and what. It's just top notch. But that's a good 6 hours of TV. I mean, 6 hours of movie if you're watching Dune Part 1 and Part 2. So, yeah.
All right. When I get a chance, I'll watch Dune when I'm feeling better. I've stuck it out. Dan, I think it's time for me to go Betty bye-bye.
It is time. I'm
this is not a complaint.
Like
this is not a complaint, Robert. Just letting you know.
Phil, we're sitting on 1 hour 45. I think what we can do is we can throw some music at the end of this podcast. Anything new you're listening to that we may want to quickly review before we get out of here?
I've been listening to a lot of American stuff. So obviously stuff that, because we want to promote, I've just been catching up on a lot of hip hop. Flo Milli's new project, Don Toliver.
I need to check out Don Toliver. Yeah.
Speaking of, Big Hash dropped his project Heartbreak Hotel. Ooh, that's a banger. There's actually a few joints that we played off there. And then obviously I didn't speak about it last week. I think I did touch on it, but I just want to shout out the team. Really, really proud, really, really happy for the guys that put the showcase. We had a little showcase for Jordan in Joburg last week. Jordan is currently here in Zim, Dan, so we'll be doing a lot of work. So I shall be calling you about maybe getting a radio interview or something, you know, just, you know.
Jordan Moosey, that is, by the way, in case you're wondering.
A lot of dope new music as well. So yeah, that's what we're up to right now. Besides that, I'm just going to recover. I should be back at it tomorrow and get back to my emails, get back to work. If you've been waiting for a response from me, sorry, we're a little behind, but I am back and better than ever. I'll hit you up soon.
Yes, and we are back. Consistency is back. You can expect the podcast to be moving. We'll be a lot more active in the group as well. It's just been a hectic couple of weeks, but here we are and we are good to go. Maybe we can end the show with support of our friend Simba.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I would also like to say if you've been part or you're part of the Patreon group, you should have got an email from me in the past few days. Also, just letting guys know, if you guys, there are a few people that have deactivated their accounts. We understand, you know, situations change. Also, we have not been consistent, so we understand. But we'd appreciate it if you're part of it, or if you fall under that group, to, you know, maybe consider reactivating your account.
Yes. We're gonna have some cool stuff for the Patreon group. If you have ever thought about it and have been hesitant, now is a great time to head on over to BrokeTimbers.com/donate. Subscribe from as little as $5 all the way up to the Minga tier. You can be paying $100 a month if you want, and you can support the podcast. We'll try to give you some perks. We'll try to give you some cool things that you might enjoy from the podcast. But the real benefit is that you're supporting the podcast that you've grown to love. And we would appreciate it very much. TwoBrokeTimbers.com/donate. In the coming weeks, you're going to be getting some cool stuff in the Patreon group. And obviously this year we have some big plans as well. So our Patreon group is always going to be the first one that gets access to everything that we're working on.
Right.
So yeah, I guess we're going to end with that brand new Simba Tags featuring Tammy Moyo. It's called Lose My Way. And we'll catch you in the next one.
We out.
If I'm far away, never lose my way. Baby, call my name. I'll never lose my way. Say no forgetting all your love for me. You know that you're the one for me. Girl, give me your love, you say ooh. Now I'm sipping it down in this room. I throw it up for my luck, give it up for my lover. Yeah. She a boss on the regular, so me said enough. You and the other girls, I'm finally. I don't wanna even talk to none of them. So baby, tell me what it is. You said you want my love, yeah. You and the other girls, I'm finally. I don't wanna even talk to none of them. These other girls come with warning lights. She said she wanna love me till the morning light. Yeah. If I'm far away,